We're doing Pirkei Avot with the Jewish home. We're up to the third chapter, the 12th Mishnah, and in some editions this is the 16th Mishnah. Rabbi Ishmael Omer. Rabbi Ishmael says, Hevei kal lerosh venoach letishchoret. And there are many interpretations to this Mishnah. We'll go with one of them. And that is, Hevei kal, take yourself lightly, meaning be a little bit submissive next to someone who is Rosh, who is above you. Venoach, and when you're with someone who is Tishchoret, who is under you, who, so to speak, you could tax, so then be comfortable next to him. Don't be like a master to him, be humble next to him. Vevei mekabel et kol ha'adam besimcha. And accept everyone with happiness. So that's what Rabbi Ishmael teaches us. When there are those who are above you, so you should not treat them with respect. Those that are beneath you, treat them with humility. And greet everyone with happiness. Now, the simple meaning of the Mishnah is very important. I know people who couldn't hold on to a job because they can never respect the fact that they had a boss. So they didn't know to be kal lirosh. They didn't know that when you have someone above you, then there's a certain respect that's required. And without that, you're not going to succeed. You can make it to the top. But remember, when you aren't there, someone else is there. And just that is a very important point. Noach letishchoret, that's also important. People sometimes, the second they have someone under them, the second they meet someone who's less intelligent than them, or someone who's inferior to them in whatever way, they feel very proud next to the person. And the Mishnah tells us, no. A person should always be careful to be noach letishchoret. Be humble. They should be comfortable with you. Ve'evim kabel et kol adam b'simcha, and accept everyone with happiness. So Maimonides here has a beautiful line, which is what we ended with last week, and that is Maimonides says it doesn't matter if it is a servant or a child, a Jew or a non-Jew. The fact that he is a human being means that he deserves to be greeted with happiness. That's Maimonides' comment on the Mishnah. There are people who only know how to have two types of relationships. They know how to have a relationship with someone who's bigger than them, meaning they can do the first part of the Mishnah, and they know how to respect, and they know how to listen, and they know how to obey, and they're very good at that. And then they also know how to treat people who are beneath them, to be nice and friendly, but at the end of the day, it's very clear that I'm teaching you. That I'm the giver, I'm the one up, the one down. They only know how to have relationships, what's called one up, one down. Either to be the one down, or to be the one up. But the truth is that although these attitudes are important, it's important in the correct scenario, it's very, very important to know to respect your boss, to respect your general. Sometimes guys who come out of yeshiva are not good soldiers because they think they could ask 20 questions about everything their general tells them, and you can't fight a war that way. You're not always going to have the full picture. There's no way to do that. So it is important to be able to respect authority, and it is important to be able to have amenable relationships with people who are on the receiving end. But there's a third type of relationship which is also very important, and that is the relationship of equals. Some people are always looking in a relationship to see, where do I know more, where do you know more? Where am I on top, and where are you on top? And in marriage, we have to know that there are going to be areas where she knows better, there are going to be areas where you know better, but we're always looking for the areas where we're equals. The key to the building of relationships is to be able to have mutual respect. Not to keep looking for areas where, look, I know better than you. I know finances better than you. I know Torah better than you. I know languages better than you. I know math better than you. That's not the point. The point in the relationship is to be able to find the places where we value, where we respect one another, and where we're together, where we're friends, where we could think together, where we could build together. And use one another's assets out of respecting one another. Use one another's strengths to be able to tackle life's challenges together. Ordinarily, I say this class has nothing to do with dating. This class is after you got married. But here I'll tell you a tip for dating, which it's a mashal that I like to say. Imagine two people are climbing a mountain. And as they're climbing, they see these huge rocks coming down towards them. And they have enough time to jump out of the way of the rocks. The only thing is that these two people, they have one leg tied to the other one's leg. His right is tied to her left. And so long as they in unison, they jump together to the right or to the left, they will avoid the rocks and they won't get killed or they won't get hurt. The problem is when they start saying, "Oh, let's go this way, let's go that way, let's go this way, let's go that way," by the time they finish arguing, they can be mowed down by the rocks. Well, the rocks represent the challenges of life. And in the dating class, I often say that when you're dating, what you have to look for is a partner who will jump in generally the same direction as you, meaning you can't foresee what challenges life has in store for you. What you have to find is someone who you share a world view with, someone who shares the same ideals as you, someone who shares the perspective and the same values. And so when we have to make compromises, we're both going to end up jumping in the same direction. So that's one point, which is important for dating. And now we're learning another point, and that is that it's not only about us being compatible and being able to jump in the same direction, it's also about being able to discuss, see one another's strengths, understand one another, and be able to take from the other's strength and have a better understanding so that when we entered the conversation, I was sure we should jump right. She was sure we should jump left. And by the end of the conversation, I see it her way and I'm jumping left. Very often, when husbands enter a conversation, it's about ego. Let me show her how much I know. Husbands, yeah. There's more a male problem than a female problem. And we have to know that although, yes, there are going to be the men's strength and the woman's strength, the greatest strength is when we can work together and understand one another and gain from our different perspectives. I often challenge couples, explain to her what she says and let her explain to you what you say. Very often I'm too busy trying to get her to understand what I'm saying. She doesn't understand me. And she's too busy getting me to understand what she's saying. I'm not smart enough to understand her. So let's stop. Let's reverse roles. Now you explain to her side and let her explain to you your side. But hear them out. Don't stop them off. Part of what? Usually, yes. Usually, life gives us time. Usually, you have to find the time to talk. But usually, most decisions don't have to be made in a moment. Most decisions. It's okay, not everything fits the allegory perfectly, but I'm saying there's the rocks are a long way off. You see them coming, you know. It's like in Donkey Kong. You see that thing coming down, around and around and around. You have time to think, how am I going to jump? Am I going to duck? Am I going to go down a ladder, up a ladder? You remember Donkey Kong, right?
The analogy only works for the mutual part. The other one, I don't know what the analogy is.
Okay, fine.
I'm asking, I have no idea.
I don't need the analogy. Fine, I need the concept to get across. The analogy, you can make a better one, that's fine. One of the keys is the final point in the Mishnah, and that is Heve mekabelet kol adam besimcha. To accept, doesn't say to greet, to accept with happiness. When I can convey happiness at seeing someone else, I am lighting up their life. And the person is getting nourishment that he cannot get anywhere else. There was a doctor who would smile at his patients, and the patients had so much more confidence, and they felt so much better because of his demeanor. The patients themselves said, when he's on call, we feel better. And I had the exact opposite last week. I got a phone call from a guy who, his wife was undergoing certain treatment, and they want to know if to do A, B, or C. And I told them, if she undergoes one more thing, then there's a better chance of that treatment working. I looked into it. I spoke to doctors after they called. And turned out that She needed to undergo one more thing in order for that treatment to work better. She said, I don't want to see another doctor again. The doctor she saw was so vicious to her that she refused. She, even though she was almost finished with the treatment, she needed one more thing, and maybe the treatment would have succeeded. And she refused. Story from last week. She said, after what? I didn't ask. She said that the way he spoke and the way he treated her was just so cruel that she wasn't willing to see another doctor. And Chazal tell us, Heve mekabel et kol ha'adam besimcha. Accept every person with happiness. Meaning there are two things. One is to be accepting. I think that's a question of attitude. Am I willing to be accepting? And the second is to accept them with happiness. There was a beautiful story. There was a rabbi here at the Machon who had a certain student over at his house. And that student, he had all kinds of things from the culture he came from, and he had a very heavy accent, and he was a difficult person to have over at the house. One of the other students, after that student left, said, how do you have a guy like that over at your house? So the rabbi innocently said, what's the problem? And the student was like, you didn't notice he yells every time he talks at the table? The rabbi said, no. You didn't notice that? And he started listing a whole bunch of things. The rabbi said, no, I didn't notice any of that. Yeah, heve mekabel. First, we have to be willing to be accepting. And then we also have to go the second notch and do it besimcha, with happiness. And like every midah that we've been learning about, a person has to first fake it, and then with time it becomes real. Every trait, in the beginning it's forced. And we believe that we can control our tendencies, we can control who we are. In the beginning it's forced, and with time it becomes second nature. That's how we acquire traits. Mishnah Yud Gimel, Rabbi Akiva Omer, and Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel were contemporaries. They had many different arguments. Rabbi Akiva says, Schok v'kalut rosh margilin le'erva. Schok is lightheadedness. Schok could be mocking, laughing, jesting, and kalut rosh, and being lightheaded. Margilin le'erva. They get a person accustomed to the point where he can transgress adultery and all the other prohibited relationships. In order to succeed in Torah, one has to be a person who is productive, who does things with alacrity. Rabbi Akiva comes and warns us of two traits. He says joking, you know, when you make fun of something, that has the capacity to bring distant people together. Meaning two people who are from two separate nationalities, but if they're both anti-Semites, suddenly they have a united cause. So Venezuela and Iran, everything works together, and suddenly all of South America is talking about how they're going to recognize the Palestinian state. What does Palestinian state have to do with them? Oh, it has everything to do with them. Oh, wow. When you break the boundaries of decency, and these are natural boundaries, and we feel certain inhibitions, and you start making fun of someone, so it could lead to all forms of racism, but it can also lead to the most disgraceful acts becoming acceptable. And so then, two people who have no business being together, she's married, he's married, she's prohibited to him, he's prohibited to her, but when we're joking, so then what is joking really doing? When a person jokes and he jests and he mocks and he ridicules, what he is doing is he's removing God from the scene.
Making light of the serious thing, actually.
Right, but that lightness that he's making of the serious thing is also taking something that has depth and making it light.
Yes.
And he's also removing the yoke of heaven. The yoke of heaven is something that's serious. Yeah, I have a certain responsibility. I have to have scruples. I have to be moral. And the truth is that God created every one of us that we want to be free. And one of the things we want most is to be free of God. The human being really wants to be an animal. Hashem created us with a godly spirit and an animalistic body. And there's a constant struggle between the two. The spirit wants to pull us up. There's that desire within to be angel-like, to be good, to be godly. But there's also that normal animalistic tendency and desire to be an animal. And there are certain sins specifically that help a person feel like, God, I got God out of the picture. Now I can do what I want. One of them is the lashon hara. When I speak bad about someone else, it's as though, now I'm plotting. You see, the snake, when he wanted God out of the picture, how does he get Eve to succumb? He starts talking badly about God. Another one is the desire for revenge, or the acting on revenge. And another one is when we joke. When we joke, so what we're doing is we're taking off the natural inhibitions, and we are leaving capacity to connect with people who we'd never think of connecting with, who we'd never be able to connect to. Because what we're doing is we're using, so to speak, the tools of Satan. We're using these things that are just about removing seriousness where it should be present. And that's the schok and kalut rosh. Look at Eve. The snake comes to her and he starts bad-mouthing God. Oh, I see God wouldn't let you eat from any of the fruits in the field here. No, we could eat everything. Yeah, but if I can get you to look at it differently, if I can get you to look at it, if I could get you to hate him, if I could get you to view him negatively, if I could get you to accept Lashon Hara, what is Lashon Hara? I'm not lying, I'm just changing your perspective. You know that this person has a million good things about him, but I'll show you the one thing that's bad, and I'm going to put such a spotlight on that, that'll take the whole picture. Well, that's what the snake does. He says, look, the whole field? No, there's only one tree I can't eat, she answers him. But he says, you know how good that tree is? That's the one thing he wouldn't give you. You know why he wouldn't give you that one? So suddenly everything that she has isn't worth a lot. And then she eats it and she knows she's going to die. So then comes the next step. Jealousy. Says to her, you know, she starts thinking, if I'm going to die, he's going to marry someone else. So now she betrays her faith to her own husband. So there are certain traits that have a way of creeping in and destroying the most basic connections we should have. And they have a way of removing the yoke of heaven. And part of it is the schok, the lightheadedness, the joking, the kalut rosh. And the truth is that lightheadedness can bring a person to the heaviest sin. If we only joke about it, then nothing's serious. What's so serious about bowing to an idol? Come on. You know, you bow down to pick up your shoes from under the bed, that's okay. I can make fun of everything. And anyways, who said he's better alive than dead? So what's so bad about murder? Who said murder was bad? You want to start philosophizing? You want to start making light of things that are really serious? Then you could get everywhere. So Rabbi Akiva begins the Mishnah by telling us the two tools that can really bring a person to the most base sin. The sin that on one hand God created us with a natural desire for, and yet a natural inhibition and a recognition and understanding this is wrong. And yet he tells us, you want to know what things lead a person to it? Lightheadedness. Spend your time laughing at a bar? You should know. There's a reason why certain things end up happening in bars and they don't end up happening in yeshivas. There's an atmosphere that leads to something. Now, Rabbi Akiva was careful. He took two terms that are very close to other terms that are positive. If you'll talk to me about simcha, happiness is critical. You can't succeed in Torah without being happy. And Torah should make you happy. It should be cyclical. Chazal tells us, you want to succeed in learning, you have to be happy. You want to succeed in davening, you have to be happy. You want to succeed in prophecy, you have to be happy. Happiness is vital. And we're willing to use external forces to get happiness. We'll play good music. We'll do a lot of things to be happy. Happiness is very important, but happiness isn't schok. There's a very fine line between happiness, which is pure and good, and schok, which is mocking and ridiculing and laughing. Two different things. So Rabbi Akiva says, I'm warning you from schok because I know you need simcha. And I'm warning you from kalut rosh, from lightheadedness, because you do need kalut aguf. The body has to be light. A person should be light in what he does, should be swift, he shouldn't be too weighed down, too serious isn't good either. But not kalut rosh, so there's a balance here. Rabbi Akiva continues and tells us, Masrot Se'ag Lo'osher, you want to know what protects a person's wealth? That's giving his tithe, giving to the poor. Masoret Se'ag La'Torah, a good tradition is the best protection for retaining the Torah. It could be the tradition, it could be the traditional tunes. Nidarim Se'ag La'Prishut, and the excellent protector to hold a person back from sinning is a vow, provided that he takes his vow seriously. We don't approve of taking vows, but sometimes a person sees he's going to sin if he doesn't take a vow. What is a person saying when he takes a vow? He says, by God's honor, this is the truth, this is what's going to be. So if a person takes that seriously, that could sometimes prevent him from sinning. Boaz finds a young girl at his feet in the middle of the night, and he knows that he might succumb. So what does Boaz do? He takes a vow. He says, I swear nothing's going to happen until we take it to court and find out what should happen here. Why does he swear? We have on tradition, he swore to subdue his desire. Because he knew that if he lets nature take its course, as much as he doesn't want something wrong to happen, it could happen. So he takes a vow. Nidarim, siag leprishut. Vows can protect a person to hold him back from doing what's wrong. Siag lachochma, the greatest protector of wisdom, shtika, silence. King Solomon already told us, the biggest fool, if he only stands there quietly, they'll think he's smart. Today they have a saying, better be silent and let people wonder if you're smart than start talking and remove all doubt. But the truth is that King Solomon said it already. Even a fool who's standing quietly can be considered smart. Siag lachochma shtika, the greatest protector for wisdom is silence. Now, obviously, if you have something positive to say, say it. If you have Torah to say, say it. But in general, a person has to know that Berov Devarim lo yechdal pasha. Shlomo HaMelech said, you talk too much, inevitably you will destroy, you will ruin. And this is a very, very important point to remember, especially when you're in delicate situations. Now we'll go back to negotiating tactic. One of the things that makes people very uncomfortable is when there's silence. You have to learn not to let that budge you. You stand your ground. Let's say you came, we'll take the simplest case, you offered a price for a car. And the salesman, you offer 20,000 shekel, and he says, no, 35,000 shekel, what are you talking about, this car? Okay, I can go down to 32. Silence. Be quiet. Part of what's happening here is we're both uncomfortable with the silence. Fine, don't let that make you budge. If your price is fair, stand your ground. Especially here in Israel. Especially here. I mean, I went to buy a necklace before we got engaged. I told the guy my budget, and I told him, don't show me anything above the budget. So he shows me, I say, okay, I don't think there's anything here for me. I'm about to leave the store. He says, what about this? I look, and I say, yeah, that's great. So he says, okay, and he quotes me price double my budget. So I said, okay, I'm sorry, I told you my budget. So he goes down 10%. I said, I'm sorry, I told you my budget. Goes down 20%. I said, look, I didn't mean to bargain with you. I'm not saying it's not worth the price, but that's my budget. Goes down 30%, 40%, 50%. He went down to my budget. He was ready to make, meaning, and he still made money. He wasn't doing me any favor. And I had the same thing with a pair of sandals, the first pair of sandals I bought in this country. Same thing. I walked in, I told him my budget. He showed me something double the budget. And every time I kept telling him, I don't want you to lose. I was like an innocent American, right? What do I know? So I just said, you know, I told you I can't afford more than this. And they came down. They came down, you know, from 200 to 130 shekel. That's almost 50%. Huh? So, okay. Siag lachochma shtika. You have to know that silence is the best protector for wisdom. When you enter delicate situations and delicate arguments, very often, if you'll just be quiet, the other side will talk. And when they talk, very often what they're doing is they repeat what they've said already. But as they repeat it, they have to add a new slant. They add more information and you only end up smarter. So very often in life, you can get insulted, right? But still, you only get smarter by being quiet. By talking, once you've said what you had to say, okay, now the other side has to talk. In marriage, this doesn't work. In marriage, your wife is going to want you to talk. And when there's a conversation, you can't pull this one on her and say, I said what I had to say. Finished. No, we're having conversations. If we're having conversations, she'll say hers, you'll say yours. Siag lechochma shtika works until you hit the door of marriage. In marriage, you have to have conversation. And conversation means that you have to talk as much as both sides feel necessary, which means playing an active role in conversation. When women listen to conversation, they're always active, to the point where in many societies they're even cutting one another off, and they're going off on a million tangents. To men, if I start saying something and you cut me off and go off to another topic, you're not interested in what I was talking about. And I'm not going to stoop down to the level of bringing you back to the topic. So if I start telling you about the conversation I had with my boss today, and you say, one second, I just got to tell you, I got this wonderful new jacket. So to a man, it's like, oh, so you're not interested in hearing what I had to tell you? To a woman, all it means is, I want to share this, you tell me that. And we're going to go back and forth, ping-ponging in our conversation. I had a very interesting experience when we were first married. My wife had a few friends over, and they started talking at the table, and I sat in silence. So after about a half hour, my wife whispers to me, aren't you interested in the conversation? I said, I'm very interested, but I don't know which conversation you're having. Every minute, you're like, going off to this, to that, to the other thing, and to them, that's conversation. You know, to me, it was a marvelous thing. I grew up without sisters, so I just sat there like, whoa. Okay, but men have to learn not to be insulted by that. And it's important also at some point early on in the marriage to have an overt conversation about this, to say, look, the way men talk, if you cut me off and you go off to another subject, I know I learned this, I know you're still interested in what I have to say, but I'm going to have a very hard time sharing with you what's going on with me because my feeling is that you're interested in other things. Right? That's men's conversation. If I start telling you something, you go off on 10 different tangents, you're not interested in what I'm telling you, which is fine, but I'm not going to bring you back to it. So many men end up living their lives in total solitude. They'll try once, and she's not interested, obviously, because she went off on her own conversation. Not true. If you could lead it back, and B, you could tell her, I want to tell you something. I want to share something with you. Could we stay on topic now for a minute? You'll have to remind her a few times, but once you're aware of it and you realize that this is a normal conversational pattern for women and we just have different conversational patterns, so then you shouldn't get upset by it and you should be able to have normal conversation. Bottom line, siag lachochma shtika is excellent. Don't fight if you're in a fight, so better be quiet. But in conversation with your spouse, then you have to play a more active role. Yeah, David. Yeah.
Is it possible that a mesechet is beyond a person's material?
That a what?
A mesechet? I'm really worried that the Rosar is like way past my material.
Could be, yeah. Could be, but I would recommend the person consult with a rabbi that knows him and knows the mesechet specifically. Wow, that deserves a longer conversation. Sorry.
See, I need to mature before the next time I sit down and try and learn the Sabbath, or...
We have to have a longer conversation. It's not... I don't understand yet what's bothering you. Yeah?
Just laughing at the time with, how women are talking, and then you think, my mom and my aunt, what they would do is, they'd both be in a room talking, and it's like they're having a conversation with themselves, but they're each having their own conversation. They're just both in the room telling each other, but they're only... following their own conversation.
It's
so trippy to watch. Because they don't lose each other's spot.
Like,
they both know what they're talking about. They're both hearing each other, but they're only talking to themselves. And it's so weird to watch.
But okay, so you're aware of it. Yeah.
And also, maybe when Shlomo HaMelech says, even a fool and son can be considered wise, maybe he means if a person doesn't understand the reasoning of Chazal, but if the person still stays silent and accepts their reasoning, that can be considered wisdom.
Oh, so... What you're saying is a thought that Maimonides writes in the introduction to the 10th chapter of Sanhedrin. The Rambam writes that we will sometimes encounter places where our sages say something that seems absolutely ridiculous. And at that point, there are three ways that people react. One group says, if Chazal said it, they were right, and all of science doesn't know what they're talking about, or you guys don't know what they're talking about, and at the end of the day, they were right, and I believe it, and I'm faithful to the faith. Rambam says that's a fool, and that's a person that's making all of the rabbis look like fools. Anyone who hears him says, okay, that's not a wise nation, that's a foolish nation. Second group, is a group that says, what do you mean? Science says this, and logic says this, and our sages said that. Well, that doesn't work. So obviously our sages didn't know what they were talking about. Says the Rambam, he's also wrong. Then you have a third group that says, well, our sages were wise men. They knew what they were talking about. Science and logic also make sense, and it doesn't coincide well with what our sages said. So what do? I say, our sages knew what they meant. I don't know what they meant. One of these days, maybe I'll figure it out. But as far as what they meant, I don't know what they meant. I don't know what they meant to say by that. So for now, it will remain a mystery to me. I still respect them. I still value what they had to say. And I don't claim to understand them or to take them literally and swear that my understanding is right, even in the face of contradicting evidence. That, says the Rambam, is the smart approach along the lines of what you said. Yeah. Okay, to be continued next week.